This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Please listen to verses 9 to 11 of chapter Hud from the Holy Quran, recited by Mr. Sayyid Ahmad Mirzadeh Waqifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَلَئِنْ أَذَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ مِنَّا رَحْمَةً ثُمَّ نَزَعْنَاهَا مِنْهُ إِنَّهُ لَيَئُوسٌ كَفُورٌ وَلَئِنْ أَذَقْنَاهُ نَعْمَاءَ بَعْدَ لَيَقُولَنَّ ذَهَبَ السَّيِّئَاتُ عَنِّي إِنَّهُ لَفَرِحٌ فَخُورٌ الذين صبروا وعملوا الصالحات أولئك لهم مغفرة وأجر الذين صبروا وعملوا الصالحات أولئك لهم مغفرة وأجر كبير صدق الله
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. And if we make man taste mercy from us, then take it off from him, most surely he is despairing, ungrateful. And if we make him taste a favor after distress has afflicted him, he will certainly say, The evils are gone away from me. Most surely, he is exulting, boasting. Except those who are patient and do good. They shall have forgiveness and a great reward.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Our headlines. A high-ranking Taliban official says discussions are underway in Doha about a future Afghan government, including its structure and name. Military flights evacuating diplomats and civilians from Afghanistan resume after Kabul airport was cleared of people desperate to flee the Taliban takeover of the capital. Also, the International Atomic Energy Agency says Iran has produced 200 grams of uranium metal enriched up to 20% for its research reactor. Thank you for joining us. Beginning with our top story, a senior Taliban official says talks are underway in Qatar about a future Afghan government, including its name and structure. The Taliban's political deputy leader, Mullah Abdullah Ghani Baradar, said the talks are taking place in Doha. He said Taliban delegates there are in contact with the international community and political parties within Afghanistan. The country fell to the Taliban on Sunday after they captured the capital, Kabul. They took the presidential palace hours after Afghan President Ashraf Ghani fled the country. Kabul's takeover followed the capturing of other key cities by the Taliban. In order to discuss the Afghans' future government, I'm joined by Andrew K.P. Lung. He is an international and independent strategist joining us out of Hong Kong. Thank you for joining us. Well, the question is, do you think that the Taliban will take the necessary steps to be formally recognized by other countries by, you know, respecting human rights, including women's rights?
Whether or not they're going to pay a lot of attention to respecting human rights is another question. But I think evidently they would try all they could to get recognition from a number of major countries, particularly Russia, China, and particularly countries in the region. Because you can see that they took power. They swept through the whole of Afghanistan so rapidly. The rapidity suggests that they have a great deal of people support. The Afghan people were really fed up with corrupt American installed regime and full of corruption, full of incapacities. And now the president, the American installed figurehead, is quickly left with a lot of cash. So the whole Afghan people want a change of the dynamics in Afghanistan, because they're leading a terrible life with the kind of wars, forever wars, waged by the United States, and now all for nothing. So for China, it's a game-changing moment, because this episode is a significant demonstration one more time that the United States, as a world hegemon, is in retreat, retreating from its responsibilities, retreating from its promises, and that is the this kind of demonstration also weakens some of the American allies, believing that America could give them cover in case of exigencies. Now, as China's interest is several fold, first of all, China's interest is in regional stability, because Afghanistan sits at the crossroads of Central Asia, and a lot of countries are plagued by conflicts and foreign intervention. So this affects China's periphery, but also, more importantly, Afghanistan houses the Eastern Turkestan independence movement, which of course is a security threat and a terrorism threat to Xinjiang. So I think that the Chinese would be, in fact, have met a high-level Taliban delegation. As you can see from the picture, the image shown released by Beijing, you can see that the Taliban delegation, all the members were interspersed with the Chinese delegation, which is a stark contrast with the kind of reception given to the visiting American Deputy Secretary of State, Wendy Sherman. So I think that the as far as the Taliban is concerned, definitely they want recognition, and China has sent out signals that expecting the Taliban government would moderate its extreme kind of repressive, in some way regard extremely cruel enforcement of Sharia law. Now, of course, the Taliban is not the only Arabian country practicing Sharia law. A number of Arabian countries do the same. But I think the Taliban is being regarded by the whole world as a particularly cruel kind of regime. So in order to get international legitimacy, the Taliban has got to moderate some of its policies. Mm-hmm. And I think China has sent out signals. But also China wants a stable Afghanistan for the extension of its Belt and Road project. Belt and Road through Afghanistan, so the rest of Central Asia. And of course, China would invest in huge resources in Afghanistan in exchange for Taliban's promise not to allow the ETSM, the separatist movement, to destabilize Xinjiang.
All right, Mr. Lung, in 1 minute, if you can, Taliban officials have said that the future government will be open to political parties within Afghanistan. What will be the makeup of the future government in Afghanistan, in your opinion?
Well, I think that there are some still some remnants of the American installed regime, which has been in Afghanistan for the past 20 years. And definitely, apart from the kind of extremists, apart from the Pashtuns, there are various other kind of factions, because the Taliban kind of tribe are not the only tribes in Afghanistan. So in order to achieve a cohesive country, they've got to be more inclusive. And that's what China wants as well, because without a more inclusive government, there could be continuing instability.
Thank you so much for joining us. I've been talking to Andrew K.P. Lung. He is an international and independent strategist joining us out of Hong Kong. Now, to learn more about the latest developments on the ground, I'm joined by our correspondent in Kabul, Amin Alami. Amin, it's good to talk to you. So tell us what's going on in Afghanistan right now.
Well, right now, I'm standing in police district in Kabul. There was a swamp known as a diplomatic area and the green zone of Kabul. Behind me, there is a British embassy that is currently under the control of Taliban members. The UK has evacuated all of the staff of this embassy. The US embassy also is located in the same area. There is no American troop or any staff inside the US embassy as well. The most of other foreign embassies who are stationed in Kabul have also left the Afghan capital, but there are still some foreign embassies that are operating here. For instance, Turkish embassy, the Islamic Republic of Iran, China's embassy, and then as well as a Russian embassy are still operating in the Afghan capital, Kabul. this comes as China has recently confirmed that it is going on, it is working on a plan to have friendly relations with the Taliban if they respect some humanitarian values as well as the international human rights law and as well as the demands of the international community. However, the Taliban sources, particularly the media team of Taliban, has declared that the group's spokesman, Zabihullah Mujahid, is going to hold a press conference today here in Kabul, and he's going to talk to about the recent development and the most important issues related to the Taliban presence in the Afghan capital, Kabul, later on today, and we're going to join this press conference. But when it comes to the situation in the, inside the city, you can see that the Taliban are patrolling. They are calling on the residents of Kabul to come back and resume their daily life. But still, we are witnessing that many places, many buildings are still closed. For instance, besides me, there is a supermarket, and it is still closed. Some of the areas like universities and foreign offices and foreign NGOs that are located in this very important area in the Afghan capital, Kabul, are also closed. In the meantime, the international have called on the Taliban to pay respect to the demand of the international community and to the demand of the Afghan people. However, the Taliban has also said that we are after bringing peace and security and calm to Afghanistan because the people of Afghanistan have suffered decades-long misery, violence, bloodshed, and war. However, the people of Afghanistan and regional countries and the entire world call on the Taliban to prove how they can bring stability, unity, and peace in this country.
Thank you so much for joining us. I've been talking to Amin Alami, our correspondent in Kabul. Now, let's move on. Military flights have resumed evacuating foreign diplomats and civilians from the Afghan capital, Kabul. The resumption comes after Kabul airport was cleared of people desperate to flee the Taliban takeover of the capital. On Monday, the airport saw chaotic scenes in which U.S. forces fired at crowds to make way for American military transport planes to take off. At least five people died on the runway. The Taliban took control of Kabul on Sunday without fight. That followed dramatic advances by the militant group across the country during the past week. Meanwhile, U.S. President Joe Biden has defended his decision to withdraw troops from Afghanistan. He acknowledged that the country's mission in Afghanistan made many missteps.
I stand squarely behind my decision. After 20 years, I've learned the hard way that there was never a good time to withdraw U.S. forces. That's why we're still there. What's happening now could just as easily happen 5 years ago or 15 years in the future. We have to be honest. Our mission in Afghanistan has taken many missteps, made many missteps over the past two decades.
In a live address, Biden also said the U.S. mission in Afghanistan was never supposed to be a nation building. He said the Afghan government collapsed more quickly than expected. He blamed the Taliban's takeover on Afghan political leaders who fled the country while the army surrendered to the militant group without a fight. Elsewhere in his remarks, Biden warned the Taliban not to disrupt or threaten the evacuation of American diplomats and Afghan translators at Kabul airport. The U.S. president underlined that the response to any attack would be quote, swift and forceful. Biden has faced a barrage of criticism over his handling of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Political commentator Frank M. Spack says the U.S. approach to fighting the Taliban has been defective all along. Listen.
Like most people in this country don't think the war was a good idea and want to get out. Now, the Republicans are already attacking him on he didn't do the withdrawal correctly and it looks like Saigon and so on and so forth. I don't think that's going to work very well. The fundamental issue is we're getting out. But what is missing from President Biden and almost every single commentator here is that there's a political issue. This is one of the first times that the word civil war has been enunciated by anybody in leadership. In fact, no army can collapse the way the Afghan army did if they actually had anybody in it who believed in fighting for the government. Instead, we have a kleptocracy here, or did, and everybody knew they were getting paid off and the soldiers weren't being paid and so forth. The fact that our method of trying to fight the Taliban was to incite a civil war, it just shows how bankrupt that whole political line was and is, both in Afghanistan and wherever we do it next.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel says the U.S.-led NATO operation in Afghanistan has achieved less than planned.
It is now a given that al-Qaeda can no longer carry out attacks against the United States from Afghanistan, as they did on September 11, 2001. But everything that has followed has not been as successful and has not been achieved in the way we had planned.
Merkel added that the state of affairs in Afghanistan suggests foreign troops who lost their lives there seems right now like, quote, it was all in vain. She noted that the rapid return of the Taliban to power was particularly dramatic and terrible. Leader of Merkel's party, Armin Laschet, had earlier called the Afghanistan operation the biggest debacle in NATO's history. Meanwhile, British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab said London would use all the means at its disposal to hold the Taliban to account. The UN Security Council has called for the establishment of a new government in Afghanistan and urged an immediate end to violence and restoration of the security in the country. The 15-member council also called for an immediate end to hostilities and human rights abuses. It demanded all parties to allow immediate, safe, and unhindered humanitarian access to the country. The UN Secretary General also expressed similar desires. Antonio Guterres urged all parties, especially the Taliban, to end violence, protect the lives of civilians, and respect international law and human rights.
We're using our G7 presidency to make very clear to the Taliban that we will hold them to account for their commitment and never to allow Afghanistan to be used as a base for terror, to hold a more inclusive government and to protect the most essential human rights, including respecting the rights of women.
Raab said London is working with its partners to come up with everything that can be applied, even sanctions. French President Emmanuel Macron said Afghanistan should not become the sanctuary of terrorism again. They said the European Union would set up an initiative to thwart a large migrant flow from Afghanistan. Meanwhile, the Russian Foreign Ministry said the situation in Kabul was stabilizing. Russian embassy in Kabul, which, unlike many Western countries, is up and running, said the situation of Afghan capital is better than under former President Ashraf Ghani. Elsewhere, the International Atomic Energy Agency has verified Iran has produced uranium metal up to 20% purity for its research reactor. The IAEA report shows the production of 200 grams of uranium material. Tehran had already announced it was researching uranium metal to provide advanced fuel for its research reactor. The U.S. has reacted to the report, claiming Iran has, quote, no credible need to produce uranium metal. The Islamic Republic began scaling down its commitments under the 2015 nuclear deal 1 year after the U.S. pulled out of it and reimposed sanctions on the country. Iran and the remaining signatories have held several rounds of talks on the revival of the deal. However, talks have made no breakthrough due to excessive U.S. demands. Tehran wants the U.S. to remove all sanctions in a verifiable manner and assure it won't leave the deal again. Well, that is it for this edition of World News.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it abundant praise. I seek refuge in him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among thy troops are the victors, and place me in thy party, for thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among thy friends, for thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
Muharram Special. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Imam Hussein was a perfect manifestation of the good virtues and an ultimate example of the Prophet of Islam. His characteristics fully demonstrated that he had been trained by his noble grandfather, Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Among his features was his love of worship, prayer, and supplication to God. God says in the noble Quran, "They used to sleep a little during the night, and at dawn they would plead for forgiveness." Dua-e Arafah or Arafah supplication of Imam Hussein is a clear example of his lofty cognizance and deep love of God. He speaks with God in part of this supplication, saying, "My Lord, what has found he who lost you, and what has lost who has found you? Certainly, he who was content with other than you is a loser. And he who has turned away from you would be harmed." On the afternoon of Tasu'a, or 9th of Muharram, Umar Sa'd ordered for attacking Imam Hussein's encampment. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, told his valiant brother, Hazrat Abbas, to get respite from Umar Sa'd. Thus, the war was postponed for the following day. The Imam told Hazrat Abbas, Brother Abbas, may I be sacrificed for you. Ride on your horse towards them, and if you can postpone the war till tomorrow morning and keep them away from us for tonight, perhaps we can engage in prayer and seeking for forgiveness with our Lord. He knows well that I love praying, reciting the Quran, supplicating much, and seeking for forgiveness at his court. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, told his companions, on the day of Ashura, Almighty God has been content with my martyrdom and your martyrdom on this day. So be resistant and fight. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, said, Recite Surah Fajr in your prayers as it is the Surah of Hussein ibn Ali, peace upon him. And whoever recites it will be at Hussein's degree on the day of resurrection. Interestingly, Fajr means dawn and light in Arabic. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, was like a light that radiated during the time of darkness of Umayyad rule to show the right path to its seekers. Asceticism and lack of attachment to the material world was another characteristic of Imam Hussein, peace upon him. He told his companions on the day of Ashura, O sons of the noble, be steadfast and know that death is just a bridge which passes you through from suffering and hardship into the vast and eternal paradise. Who does not want to be transferred from a prison to a palace? And this death for your enemies is like being transferred from a palace to a prison and place of torture. My father quoted me from the Prophet that the world is the prison of the faithful and the paradise of the faithless. And death is a bridge which takes the faithful to paradise and the faithless to the hell. The dignity of Muslims depends on accepting the system that the Prophet had designed. But the people like Yazid changed the course of government and turned it into a factor for the Muslims' humility. Clearly, Imam Hussein's goal of the uprising was to bring back God's will to the society and empower his religion. That's why the only way for him was to fight. He chose the best way to salvage God's religion, and finally, he lost his life in this way. The Imam became the manifestation of the concluding ayahs of Surah Fajr, where they read, O soul at peace, return to your Lord pleased, pleasing. Then enter among my servants and enter my paradise. According to the hadith, exegetes believe that my paradise here means God's special paradise, which has been prepared for the choicest among his servants. Surely, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, is among the loftiest servants of God. Thank you.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Qom, Iranian sacred city. Part 1.
Qom province, with an area of nearly 15,000 square kilometers, occupying less than 1% of the entire territory of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The province is linked to Tehran province in the north, to Sabeh, Tafresh, Ashtian, and Dilijan in Markazi province in the south. It lies to the southeast of Isfahan, and from the east to Kabir Valley and Namak Lake. About one-fifth of the province is covered with mountains and foothills, with the remaining four-fifths a large valley or basin. The holy city of Qom is situated in the center of the province, close to the surrounding towns of Salafjagan, Khalajistan, Kahak, and Jafariyeh. Given its historic structures, discoveries of artifacts, and the recordings of historical documents, Qom was a reputable and relatively large city in the pre-Islamic era. When Islam was introduced to Iran, Qom developed rapidly and became semi-autonomous during the sovereign reign of the Bani Umayyad and Bani Abbas caliphates. Qom is home to the heavenly court, the historic mausoleum and shrine of Hazrat Ma'sumeh, also known as Fatimeh Ma'sumeh, the daughter of Imam Musa Kazim, the seventh Imam of Shia Islam. Hazrat Ma'sumeh is revered by Muslims worldwide, and so her resting place being in Qom lifted the dignity and status of the city and conferred religious significance upon it. Among the other notable tourist attractions in the province are the holy Jamkaran Mosque and more than 400 other Imamzades, offspring of imams, shrines, seminaries, theological schools, historically important mosques such as Friday, Imam Hassan, Babul Janah, and Rafat, educational and international institutes, and Qomrud Lake. When the seventh Abbasid Caliph Ma'mun invited Imam Reza to Marv, Hazrat Ma'sumeh moved to Iran in the company of a number of Shia Muslims to meet with and join Imam Reza. But just outside Qom, she was taken ill. In her 80s at the time, she was bedridden in Qom for 17 days before she passed away.
Her body was buried in a well-respected place in the city of Bagh Babylon. Today, Bagh Babylon is famous because of Hazrat Masumeh's shrine that houses a magnificent monument. This stately edifice is one of the most important religious shrines of the Islamic world. The original shrine was built in the middle of the 3rd century Islam and was expanded substantially between the 4th and 6th centuries when a dome and artwork were added to it. Umm Azam Mosque, located right next to Hazrat Masumeh's mausoleum, is the city's Azam Mosque, known widely as Ayatollah Burujerdi's Azam Mosque. It was built in 1918 through the efforts of Sayyid Hossein Tabotabai Burujerdi. The architect of this splendid monument was a man named Hossein Lorzadeh. It is classified among the 3 largest veranda mosques. Its dome stands at 24 meters high. Today, the mosque is the Qom Seminary's most important teaching center. The mosque is now merged with Hazrat Masumeh's shrine. Recently, its dome was adorned with large thin flakes of lusterware, donated and produced under the supervision of Haj Hassan Jaber Ansari. The Tabotabai Mosque, spearheaded by Hujjatul Islam Agha Muhammad Tabotabai, the son of Ayatollah Haj Agha Hussein Qomi, a great mosque with an elevated dome was built adjacent to Hazrat Masumeh's mausoleum. Famously known as the Tabotabai Mosque, it was built between 1981 and 1991. In the 10th century Islamic era, Shah Tahmasp Safavi used bricks to build the first sepulcher on the mosque. Sometime later, an additional sepulcher made of transparent white steel was installed around the original sepulcher and a wooden door was fitted in the northern frontage. In the 13th century Islamic era, Fath Ali Shah Qajar replaced this door with a luxurious golden door. He also upgraded the sepulcher by having it coated with layers of silver and installed on a malachite pillar. With time, the sepulcher lost its radiance, so in the 14th century in Islamic era, it was again renovated. Finally, in 1973, the form of the sepulchers was altered and its height increased. Fath Ali Shah Qajar had the shrine flagstone with marble. He believed the spiritual gusts around Hazrat Masumeh's shrine has to step on the best of stones. Atiq Courtyard. In the 10th century in the Islamic era, Shah Begum Khatun, the daughter of Shah Ismail Safavi, built a square-form courtyard with 3 verandas. Later, Fateh Ali Shah had it remodeled into an irregular octagonal shape. This octagonal form is said to have been built on the memorial of Imam Reza Thaman al-Hujjaj, the brother of this holy woman, pointing to the fact that Imam Reza was the 8th Shia Imam. Gradually, the number of verandas in the courtyard increased. At the moment, it has 7 of them, 4 on the south side and 3 on the north. The verandas of the Atiq courtyard are the most famous within this court. They were built on the order of Shah Begum and gilded during the reign of Fateh Ali Shah Qajar. They constitute the entrance of the heavenly courtyard. Atop each veranda, a hadith inscription in white thulf is displayed on an azure background. Above it, a myriad of tiles and inscriptions. Imam Khomeini Great Sanctuary. It is one of the greatest architectural feats after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, featuring a multitude of porches, entrances, and other facilities. Called Balasar Overhead Mosque, it is situated nearby and overhead to Hazrat Masumeh's shrine. That's where it draws its name. In the Safavid period, it served as a motel. Inside the shrine and next to the holy tomb of Hazrat Masumeh, a mausoleum houses the eternal resting places of grand ayatollahs, scholars, and outstanding scientific and religious figures, the largest grouping of revered Muslims anywhere, particularly in the Shia world. Qum is called Darul Aman. Some of the renowned and compassionate scholars buried in the mausoleum here are Allamez Tabatabai, Khansari, Golpayegani, and Bahjat. Martyr of love and writing and eminent ideologist Murtaza Mutahhari is also buried here. In the INM mirror courtyard of the Holy Shrine lies the mausoleum of freedom crusader Sheikh Fazlullah Nuri, born in 1843 and killed in 1909. Sheikh Nuri's memorial is symbolic among the liberal crusaders of constitutionalism. This is the tomb of martyr Ayatollah Dr. Mufatteh. He was born in 1889 and martyred in 1939. Fazia Theological School was founded in the Middle Ages of Islamic history and is located in Qom next to Hazrat Masuma Shrine in Astan-e-Muqaddase, Holy Threshold Square. It was registered as a National Heritage in 2007. Astana School was replaced by Fazia School in the first half of the 13th Islamic century. According to valid historical documents, the school was established in the middle of the 6th Islamic century and was renovated in the Safavid era. The two-story building features four verandas. The 40 chambers on the first floor were built in the Qajar period, and the other 40 on the second floor were built in the 14th Islamic century. The oldest part of the seminary is where the southern veranda is and is decorated with beautiful tiles belonging to the Safavid era of 1939 AH. It is regarded as the gateway to the Atir courtyard and Hazrat Masuma's shrine. The Darul Shifa Theological School is attached to Fazia Seminary. It was founded in the beginning of the Qajar period. Originally, it was called Fath Ali Shah School. Kamran Mirza Qajar had its entrance renovated and its chambers refurbished. Since then, it has been called Darul Shifa. The building lay in ruins, but was renovated after the Islamic Revolution in 1979. The seminary now has 200 chambers and a modern conference hall. The house of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Ruhollah Khomeini is located in Shafaiya district of Qom. It's about 100 years old. Imam Khomeini purchased it in 1956. He lived here till 1963. Eventually, in 1994, it was donated to the house of Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei by his now deceased son, Sayyid Ahmad Khomeini. It was registered as a National Heritage in 1996 by the Iranian Cultural Heritage Organization.
In the limelight.
Germany added the United States to its high-risk area list and will soon tighten entry restrictions for unvaccinated travelers who had recently been in the United States. Starting Sunday, 15th of August, travelers who have recently spent time in the U.S. will need to be fully vaccinated or demonstrate an important reason for entering Germany. Those who are unvaccinated or unable to show proof of recovery will need to self-isolate for 10 days upon arrival. The quarantine period can end on the fifth day with proof of a negative COVID-19 test. The article you're about to hear has been written by journalist Bailey Schultz, writing for USA Today. The piece is titled, Germany Tightens Travel Restrictions on U.S. as COVID-19 Cases Surge. Germany added the United States to its high-risk area list and will soon tighten entry restrictions for unvaccinated travelers who had recently been in the U.S. Starting Sunday, 15th of August, travelers who have recently spent time in the U.S. will need to be fully vaccinated or demonstrate an important reason for entering Germany. Those who are unvaccinated or unable to show proof of recovery will need to self-isolate for 10 days upon arrival. The quarantine period can end on the fifth day with proof of a negative COVID-19 test. Previously, unvaccinated travelers had to show a negative coronavirus test to enter Germany. The change comes as the U.S. faces its fourth wave of COVID-19, driven by the highly contagious Delta variant. The country reported more than 900,000 new COVID cases in the past week and nearly 52% of its population vaccinated, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. Turkey and Vietnam and other countries were also added to Germany's high-risk list, joining destinations like the United Kingdom, Spain, India and Mexico. Germany has been open to tourists from the United States since 20th of June, shortly after the European Union added the United States to a list of countries it believed could see the gradual lifting of travel restrictions. The recommendation is not binding, and each country in the European bloc can enforce its own travel restrictions. The European Union has yet to remove the United States from its safe travel list, despite the US maintaining a travel ban on most European countries. Restrictions against the European Schengen area were first implemented in March of 2020 and prevent travel to the United States for most people from major European countries such as France, Germany, Italy, Greece, Netherlands, Belgium, Denmark, Austria, Sweden, Norway, Hungary, and others. German Chancellor Angela Merkel pressed President Joe Biden on the travel ban during a meeting last month. Biden said at the time that his team was reviewing the travel restrictions, but no changes have been made. The administration certainly understands the importance of international travel. Jeff Zients, White House COVID-19 response team coordinator, said during a press briefing last week. But given the prevalence of the Delta variant of the coronavirus, the United States will maintain the existing travel restrictions at this point. Meanwhile, the United States has no plans to lift travel restrictions for travelers arriving from Europe. The decision means the country's current travel restrictions, which deny entry for people from the European Schengen area, as well as people from the United Kingdom and other countries, will remain in place. Given where we are today with the Delta variant, we will maintain existing travel restrictions at this point for a few reasons, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said at a recent press briefing. Jen Psaki added, "The more transmissible Delta variant is spreading both here and around the world. Driven by the Delta variant, cases are rising here at home, particularly among those who are unvaccinated and appear likely to continue in the weeks ahead." When asked if President Biden would drop travel restrictions in the event airlines adopted vaccine passports or vaccine mandates, Jen Psaki said on Friday, "There are ongoing working groups focused on how to reopen international travel into the United States. There are a range of topics in those discussions that are ongoing," Jen Psaki added. "The president receives regular briefings on them, but we rely on public health and medical advice on when we're going to determine changes to be made." Travel industry groups have urged the Biden administration to open international travel. The Delta variant of the coronavirus now accounts for about 83% of cases nationwide and has led to a spike in U.S. COVID-19 cases. In the last 2 weeks, cases have increased 171% nationally, and the death rate is up 19% over the week before.
Insightful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim, Islamic, Allah my Lord,
His word Quran,
Muhammad Prophet,
praise be upon,
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, other life forms. You are listening to Youth Station here on IRIB English Radio. Thank you so very much for being with us. I am Zainab.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. With me also Brother Yasir. My condolences to all our dear listeners, and especially the Imam of the time, Imam Sahib al-Asr wa al-Zaman, that we have reached this month of sacredness, the month of tears of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam.
May Allah accept your mournings, and may every tear you shed for the son of Fatima be a shining light that helps you through your darkest hours, whether in this world or the next.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran,
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
We are going to go ahead and jump right to the topic of today's discussion. All right, the question basically is that, as a youth, what do I need to live in 2021? Just don't. Just don't. Throw your cell phone out of the window, crawl into a cave, and stay there where it's safe. I'm so done with the world right now. I'm just so done with it. But you seem so unbothered, bro. Like, before the show, I was telling him about 2020, and it was like, 2020, what happened? We're all at home. Seriously, how are you so unbothered by this?
It has to happen, right? Time, you know, as we see it, is this, not like as Hollywood wants you to actually understand what time is, no. Time just has to go, basically.
Guys, basically, to wrap up the show, time has to go.
It has to go.
Okay, thank you for being with us. But that was so concise, to the point, and absolutely correct.
There's nothing else you can do about it, right? This, like 2020 and all the events that occurred in it, and then all those things that kind of got moved to this year in terms of
Olympics
and Euros and God knows what else. Quite funny for myself. Euro 2020 or Tokyo 2020. And we're really over halfway through 2021.
We've been branded.
Yeah. So
we've been branded like a cow. You know, like cows that they brand them with this hot iron, like they go
pssst. The spike.
We've been branded by 2020. 2020 survivors, that's
what
we are.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Those who survived 2020. But it's still going. Like, so the thing is that people are still stuck in a particular time frame that happened before the pandemic came.
Yeah.
And people are still like, okay, so that whole time, I remember one of the internet sites I was seeing, it's nearly 600 days.
Since
like Corona, and maybe more. But according to this website, because that country, I think it was an African website, about 500 days. So South Africa, it obviously happened a lot later. The lockdown and started a lot later from, for example, China, Iran, and these countries. So if you add maybe 100 days to, it's nearly 2 years, right? Nearly.